Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 19. Tonight I am joined by Danny Ning, Eric Taylor, Lydia Tabbitt, Kirk Pettis, and I am Matt Winterer. Tonight we will be talking about seasteading, and my friend Kirk has been really excited about this. Kirk, what are your thoughts?
Well, we've, as our Liberty podcast has progressed, we've talked about money, private property, some a little bit on law, and the seasteading thing concept kind of ties everything in together. It's a concept of creating cities out on the ocean in international waters where essentially you're creating your own city and government institution, and you know you're creating your own community to live out, you know, in our uncharted waters, uncharted governmental waters, I would say, where there is no government's regulations over you. So it just opens up the mind to all different concepts and should be an exciting conversation. Should we just start out with the clip right away, Eric, or you guys want to say anything?
Well, I just wanted to mention that it very much follows along the objectivist philosophy. So if you're familiar with that, the seasteading is very similar to that.
Objectivist philosophy, you want to explain a little bit?
Objectivist was originally coined by the author Ayn Rand. I don't remember what year specifically it was. It was in the early 1950s, I believe. If anybody knows better, please correct me. And the idea is that each man should be, and woman, should be able to work to their own means. Meaning that you shouldn't be hindered nor helped by anyone else, and the effort that you put forward, you should be able to reap. You don't owe anybody anything, and nobody owes you anything.
Yes, well, a seasteading project would have to be built with that principle in mind. The sky's the limit. I mean, they could make a communist seasteading project if someone wanted to put up the money. So we all would probably want one based on the Ayn Rand principles, but you know, anyone can utilize this, and it creates the competition, just the variety out there of people being able to experiment with certain governmental philosophies. So it really, the sky's the limit. Really, there will probably be even new philosophies created around it. And, yeah, it's the innovation behind it should be limitless. But why don't we just play that clip and give it a little better overview and then go from there.
All right, here we go.
Why are you seasteading? Michael Strong, Patry Friedman, planned to jettison millions out of poverty with 1,000 floating Hong Kongs. Why seastead? Cure diseases, clean the oceans, reduce carbon in the atmosphere, feed the world, power civilization, end poverty for millions, replace fossil fuels with kelp. The old land-based rules are preventing this from happening. The time from the Wright brothers' first 15-second flight to Neil Armstrong's happy dance on the moon is 66 years. You attract enough human brains to a new frontier, provide the forum for experimentation, the inherent genius of the human race is unleashed. In forms of freewheeling competition, when humans dream up a desire, lots of other humans hustle to provide it. Every time a little island of new rules is carved off from a bigger country, within a generation, you get a Hong Kong or a Singapore or a Botswana. Every time one of these pseudo-islands is created around new rules, they solve what seem like insurmountable problems with meteoric speed. What if we had more than just a handful? What if we had hundreds of thousands? I wish I could show you the world map showing the percentage of people in each country who want to leave. Hundreds of millions of people want to leave their homes and find a place where they can unleash their dreams upon us. When I think about the potential of seasteading, I contemplate that map and think about all those souls longing for a better set of rules. The world is ready for what Pottery calls a Cambrian explosion of governance. New worlds always reinvigorate the old worlds. Who's going to be remembered as the Lewis and Clark and Sacagawea of seasteading? If we open up the sea to 1,000 floating pottery dishes, one or two of them has got to work. And by work, I mean transform civilization as frontiers always do, over and over.
Yeah, so hopefully in our lifetimes we will see some of this being produced. All the clips I watched, I mean, it's been going on for a while, but nothing major has been produced. I know they're trying to build one right outside of San Francisco, 24 miles out.
And, yeah, I believe that there's a couple going on in South America right now as well. The big efforts that I've seen so far were sponsored by Peter Thiel, who is the American entrepreneur from PayPal, who is alongside, you know, the very famous SpaceX and Tesla founder Elon Musk, also insanely wealthy. But he gave, I believe his name is Patry Friedman, $500,000 or something along those lines.
1.2.
Was it 1.2 million? All right, $1.2 million towards the founding of this project. And it was under the exact, you know, philosophy that we just heard about, that he was willing to invest this money because he believes so strongly in it. As I think anybody who's a free market entrepreneur feels that way. And I really, really hope that it becomes something good.
Well, how about I start out with why do we even have to – what forces us to go to the sea?
Well, I thought it was just really good food.
No, so it's the whole concept of people's distrust of government, the limitations imposed on people, the – like we talked about last week, the codes and regulations and jurisdictions. Not really. We talked about a couple of weeks ago the private property. We're really just renting the land from the government. So it just opens a whole new basket of worms to say for what will happen if all of a sudden there's a new world order and where now the globe is the whole country instead of just countries upon countries on land, to where all of a sudden you do have to rent the sea again. Is that, you know, a way to stop it, you know, to hinder the innovation? Or do you think that this massive amount of new upstart countries out on the sea would just turn into something like Hong Kong or some Caribbean islands, or what do you guys think about that?
I'm not sure. It seems to me it would, you know, you just, in order to, you know, I think what seasteading is trying to do is they're going to start, or they want to have an initial project that's just based on a cruise ship for, you know, for a while. And like you were saying, Kirk, you can really, with the seasteading projects, you can really try anything, right? So it's, oh, you know, it's not, I mean, you can try communism, libertarianism, socialism, capitalism, you know, whatever, you know, whatever you like, because it's on international waters, so there's no regulation at all, really. Producer of the video mentioned, it could be potentially, you know, thousands of petri dishes, you know, looking for solutions. But it seems, you know, the various projects will only be as successful as the amount of, you know, as the amount of talent they draw and resources they have and that type of thing.
Yeah, it creates a whole new lifestyle. I mean, to say we've been talking about government policy, but it's, who's to say that they even need to have a government, but I'm sure something will, I mean, like I live in a condo now and there's the association and the leadership through that to make the infrastructure decisions. But,
well, I know whatever seasteading island I end up on, I want to make sure that I end up owning the whole thing so that people just have to listen to me as a dictator.
There you go. Sign me up.
Awesome. At least I've got one person who believes in me.
But yeah, it's the beauty of it that I see is the utilization of current and future technologies that are hard to coincide with these old government style corporations that they are, and how to deal with the land and the current infrastructure, the just society, as you know, the statutes and laws they create, that it really hampers, and it's kind of a slow moving gear system. And you know, with say robots coming up, like we talked aquaponics, you know, things like Bitcoin, all these could be really strongly utilized. 3D printing could be really strongly utilized on these floating cities and just create new to where you don't have to worry about the day-to-day things that we have to worry about on land, you know. Mm-hmm. So it could really free up the mind to even further innovation, like the guy was talking about, further medical innovations, and who knows, maybe even better processes of growing food, you know, because that'll definitely be one thing to that's going to be one of the biggest things to worry about out in the ocean. So these things will be built so big that major storms, I don't think, will even be a problem.
Yeah, that has been, I've seen that's been a concern for some, is that, you know, how seasteads would withstand, you know, hurricane force winds and that type of thing.
Which I personally believe is a really legitimate concern. Yeah. The engineering aspect of what's being proposed is daunting, to say the least. The cost of putting up new oil platforms is astronomical, and we're talking about putting up new cities that are outside of international boundaries, and that cost is not cheap. So just to set up one of these experiments is going to be a very expensive proposition. So the question becomes, who's going to have the money to do this and believe strongly enough to take advantage of that?
Yeah, there was this one YouTube clip I watched that this guy came up with a design. And probably close to 200 feet high.
Back.
Did anything change, Eric? I got a lot of reverb.
Yeah, well, I had some audio issues there for about 20 seconds.
So we're still good to go?
Yeah, I was pulling up a clip on another seasteading topic and seemed to have some problems.
All right. Back. Yeah, it's everything I say is repeated. Oh. But anyways.
Yeah, he's definitely still echoed.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come fine on the recording.
Hold on a quick second. Let me try it again here.
Right.
Testing.
Okay. Try it now.
Sounds better.
Does it?
Okay. Not as bad.
All right.
Oh, it's way better.
Yeah. Yep. So where was I? Yeah, so this concept this guy had created, can't remember his name, but they needed, they were going to be able to make it for $11 billion. And to make it profitable, they needed 30,000 residents. The whole top of the city was going to be pretty much an airport where commercial jetliners could land. And they were hoping that it would just be a major hub, economical hub, where, you know, there'd be flights to and from daily and tourism. And it'd be pretty crazy. And I thought for $11 billion, that's actually pretty economically feasible for when you look at a sports stadium for $1 billion plus usually today, that for $11 billion to make the largest vessel ever dreamed up would be pretty fascinating. But the whole concept of 30,000 people on a new government starting out at once creates a lot of issues.
So how much does it cost for a lot of land or platform, whatever you call it, if you were to just want to just buy like a, yeah, just on average, how much does it cost to...
Just to go make a house on the ocean?
Yeah.
Like an oil platform?
Sure.
I have no idea. The problem with an oil platform, it's stationary for the most part. So having a floating platform that is just movable would be cheaper, I would think, than a stationary vessel or platform on the Gulf or in the ocean. But I've never looked into it, so that'd just be a guess. But
and one thing I think about when you're talking about something like seasteading, I've even seen people talk about spacesteading or whatever. Is that how is this any different than people, like-minded individuals, just moving to the same area and doing whatever they're going to do, organizing whatever way they're going to organize, and eventually putting together whatever type of infrastructure they're going to do. To a certain extent, seasteading seems like a solution in search of a problem, because you have, around the world, you have societies that have developed around people who have kind of like-minded beliefs and attitudes and that type of thing.
Yeah, it just shows the crux of the problem. And that's kind of what we talked about a little bit last week was, why can't we just live free on land, just have some property, do your own thing, and not be inside the government. I mean, you can still reside inside a government, but why do you still have to follow every jurisdictional statute and code law? That's to escape that, the seasteading concept has to be done. And then so it would be ideal just to show how societies could function in a competing sense and what works, what doesn't. And because as much as I'd like to see a liberty-minded seastead, I would just as same time want to see, a communist or socialist type, one too, to see, if they can make it work or not, just to prove and disprove, concepts, ideas, functions, see how they have to be propped up, see if, if even if a liberty-based one, if you can do it without creating debt, would be ideal in my mind.
But so, you're kind of devil's advocate. We've already seen that on land. I mean, there have been, liberty-based societies, communists, socialists, fascist, authoritarian, systems that, I kind of have, as far as the seasteading is concerned, I don't see how it would be. I mean, you maybe have more pure societies. You have smaller numbers and maybe be able to be more successful. That way, if you don't have, such a mass of people, but by and large, like anything that would happen in a seastead, it's It's probably already been attempted before on land, right?
I like to think so, but I don't know. I mean, when the United States was formed, there were certain issues that we had to deal with that prevented a lot of true liberty-based concepts from being created. And we've gone down such a more and more top-down structure in America that we'll never get back to it. And the seasteading thing at least provides an avenue to do that. But
the reset button, basically.
Yeah. Look, I guess Hong Kong would be one of the best examples. It's not total free society, but it's more free market-based society, I would say.
You know, I think it'd be reasonable to say that we are looking at a situation where the democratic society instead of the republic is starting to take over, and that makes it so that the individualist side of objectivism is no longer being embraced, and that's why the need is there, right?
And it, you know, could probably work pretty well on a smaller scale, especially if you want to talk about democratic or a mob politics versus Republican or representative politics to happen on a smaller mass, right? Rather than having 300 million people, you have maybe 10,000 people that really buy into the philosophy, and it probably would work.
But what kind of structure would it be based on? I mean, if it's democracy, I would foresee it failing.
Here's a problem I'm seeing with seasteading, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but the problem is, we talk about, immigration to the United States back when it was founded, and, this spring, the development of Hong Kong, the commonality that they have for those is, land already exists. So, people can just move in, and then there's resources. You can cut trees to build houses, and there's other type of resources, minerals, et cetera, et cetera. Problem with seasteading is, you start with water, and, we human beings can only live on land and, breathe air. They can't breathe in water. So, obviously you need to build platforms and, places where people can stand, sit, to walk around, and that costs money. And how I see it is only the rich people who have enough money can invest into seasteading, in expanding this type of ideology. So how I see it is this not – I don't know. I don't see that it's going to – like you said, it's not going to be a lot of people in these type of communities. And with these people who are going to be in these communities are going to be the rich people. And people like us who are more, middle class and who does not like the government, who typically are not as wealthy.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I guess my initial opinion on that is that, there were people that came to the United States early in its history that were not the wealthiest of the wealthy. I mean, the thing that immediately came to my mind when you started talking about that was apprenticeships or I don't want to say like indentured servants, but do you know what I mean? Like there are ways to bring along people who may not be able to fund the project on their own that are still able to contribute things based on, a commitment of skills or, that kind of a thing. So I think it's fair to assume that people who are willing to take a risk or are willing to learn or participate wouldn't necessarily be excluded. I don't know, just sort of
That's interesting go ahead, Danny.
I'm guessing, I'm taking the standpoint of where, if I'm the investor and I have the funds to invest into this type of project, why would I, I guess it, you know, you do have a point. Like, if I really like someone because this guy had the skills to, you know, build a house, and yeah, maybe I'll bring them in. But I don't know. It's I don't know what the cost of building a house in, you know, in CSUN.
It would be pretty much condo living, apartment living.
Right. My point is, you know, space is very, it seems like, you know, for the amount of cost that you're paying for the space that you're getting, you're probably not getting much. So, you know, it doesn't really incentivize me to, you know, to bring someone in who doesn't really have the money to share a room with me or something like that. I don't know.
It's an island fever on something like that, too.
I think it's interesting. This is actually covered in Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. Is there was a community formed inside a valley inside the state of Colorado. And it was camouflaged from above by some magic machine. So this guy created this magic machine that made it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. There's a magic
machine.
Whoever
hasn't read.
But at any rate, there's. If you haven't read it in the 50 years it's been out, I'm not doing a spoiler alert. But at any rate, so there's this valley, and inside the valley, there's really, really extraordinary individuals. And these extraordinary individuals were attracted by one particular individual. And the idea is that once there is, it's kind of an if you build it, they will come kind of scenario. So if you were able to start an establishment like a seasteading institute that looked attractive to people with intelligent minds, they knew that they could benefit from being there, that they would come, and despite the fact that coming at a deficit, they could earn their way out of it quickly and then become producers within the society. And that's kind of the idea behind that philosophy.
Yeah, it'll definitely not be for everyone. And so it's just for the people that want to escape the governments. Like the clip said earlier, he was estimating that 100 million people in the world would like to get away from where they live. And these seasteads will need people to work at them. And so it's it's either, I mean, I would think that if there are wealthy people that are wealthy enough to not have to worry about physical labor, then they would need people to do physical labor on these seasteads. And so there would be avenues of renting, you know, you work and it pays for your place that where you live there. And then whatever else, entertainment. I mean, you can't, they're not just going to build these with you got to have some form of entertainment. So there's cities. They'll have all massive things. People will create their own businesses inside it, shops, movie theaters, parks, you know, and whatever way to make a living out there, it's either through technology, through other countries, or just general investing. But
well, I mean, these people who, you know, you talk about, like, you know, creating jobs and all that. I mean, these wealthier people who's going to be moving in, I mean, chances are these are the people that already have the jobs and already have the skills. And, you know, they can, you know, like a very highly skilled mechanic all of a sudden moves into seasteading. You know, he'll probably bring his skills to seasteading as well. So
yeah, but one person can't do it all. And it's just how it's all would be structured. I mean, it's I live in a condo right now. I'm sure there's plenty of people in the condo that do all sorts of various things, but we don't do the work around here. That's all hired out by, you know, the association. So,
well, with seasteading, you're probably not going to have a lot of people living there anyway. So you really don't need that many people doing the job anyways.
Well,
so, and the
point is you're limiting your mind right now. The sky's the limit. We don't need to talk about the efficacy of how it will come to be. It will have to end up working. Otherwise, it's just a lost cause. But the whole concept around it, to have a be able to go out and create new countries in a way, instead of going out and, since there's not much land, to go out there and create your own little free domain, that this is the opportune way. And just like pretty much you can find anything on the internet with of issues that, you know, the most random thing, you'll find other people interested in the same thing. And if you build it, they will come.
I think one of the things that I would have a hard time with if I decided to move to a seastead would be the confined nature of it. You know, imagine just being in a condo on a platform.
Yep.
You know, and that's it. You know, from an idealistic perspective, it's great, but you know, from a practical, after a while, I would have to think you get a little bit of island fever, right?
Well, yeah, and that's why you would have to deal with that. I mean, that's, some of these seasteads would be traveling where, you know, they could go from country to country. Every month you show up in a new country and you can, you know, get off tour. People can come on tour. You know, that'd be a way to create an economy on the ship, to just pull up to other countries and have them come check it out and whatever entertainment you have on there.
So
yeah, like you said, I'd go golf crazy. I need one big enough to have a golf course.
Yeah.
Or you can play mini golf.
Virtual reality golf, there you go.
Oculus Rift.
But yeah, the problem I see is people, it just shows how the fallacy of a democracy. So if there was, say, 1,000 people living on one of these seasteads, and if the most common way that's argued is, oh, one vote is, you know, the best way to govern, so the majority rule, I think that would end up discouraging a lot of people. They'd live there a year and people would start voting rules, regulations into play, and, you know, it'd create the whole same kind of government system we have today, and I think that would expose the fallacy of democracy. And that's a problem I see, but that really, it goes back to the problems at the founding of this country, to where what really is a core structure of governance that, you know, can be helped for a long period of time.
So, kind of touching on Danny's thought, you know, as far as getting the funding for platforms like this, Kirk, you provided a decent clip. It's Innovative Philanthropy with Patrick Friedman. Let's play that clip and talk about it for a little bit, and then potentially we can move on to another topic based, you know, really.
Well, I thought we were going to do the floating cities clip, but you want to do the innovative?
You want to do the floating cities?
Yeah, let's skip that innovative philanthropy. That one was so dry.
Okay, let's do floating cities then.
Sounds good.
I should probably unmute it.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Don't unmute it.
The United States, seasteading has been going on for decades, and most people don't know about it. The United States was a giant raft where people from dysfunctional governments who thought they had better ideas,
giant raft,
could come and try their ideas out. They forged, you know, new ways of living together that ended up changing the world. Imagine if we had new frontiers where we could allow social entrepreneurs to try out their ideas. The world is running out of fresh water. We're running out of farmland. Some people say we're reaching peak oil. A lot of these problems can be solved if we think about how to utilize the strengths of the sea. The most exciting thing about seasteading to me is all the ideas that have not been thought of yet, and all the things we don't know about that are out there among 7 billion brains as solutions to humanity's most pressing problems that can't be tried. So right now there's about 193 nations that just hold monopoly control over 7 billion people. And we don't think the 193 nations currently in existence represent the range of ideas that could be tried out. and we want to unleash all the creativity of all the people out there in a sort of research and development department out on the ocean, where people can try out their ideas for governance, and we can see what works. You know, developmental economists talk about how every time you start over with a new country, you're able to apply more modern rules to the to how countries develop. And if we look at the most recent countries created in the last 50 years or so, we see them applying more modern political theories and more modern economic theories to their founding. And many of these countries have gotten quite rich, prosperous, and humane very rapidly. Hong Kong is basically a defenseless little peninsula and island right next to this behemoth of China. When Hong Kong gained independence, China didn't just seize it. China watched and observed, was embarrassed by the amount of wealth created in Hong Kong, adjusted its markets to be much more open, and since then at least a half billion Chinese have escaped poverty as a result of the example of Hong Kong. And we see examples like this all over the world. The United States hasn't invaded the Cayman Islands. Malaysia hasn't invaded Singapore. I mean, small island nations, if they set a better example, often change the course of large old nations. The bigger and larger a country, the more inertia it will experience. And the smaller and newer the country, the more nimble it will be, and the more likely it is to try a new idea that's likely to work. Seasteaders are agnostic about what political systems are going to work in the future. Our goal is to create a Silicon Valley of the sea where lots of seasteads, hopefully thousands someday, compete to attract residents, and the best social systems attract the best people. Why not give your political opponents a chance to try out their ideas on a seastead? You can laugh at the fiascos, and you can learn something if something surprising works. We think the inevitable result will be that solutions will emerge that are not part of what we argue about now. I would love to see, you know, a socialist seastead trying out its ideas. I would love to see an anarcho-capitalist seastead trying out its ideas. I'd like to see political systems I've never heard of and don't understand trying out their ideas. I'd like to see them attracting different types of people, different kinds of ideologues to different seasteads. And hopefully we'll create a diversity of political systems suitable to different kinds of people with different kinds of values. And in this market of governance, we'll discover the best solutions for how to live together. We're perceiving that a proliferation of countries leads to more solutions. I think if more people understand the power of seasteading to solve problems they care about, I think we can really change the world.
Well, Peter Thiel's been investing in this.
Audio issues again there.
Yeah, I could tell for a second. But, you know, so going back to, I mean, what's wealth? It can only get you so far. You know, Bill Gates, what is it, three quarters of $100 billion, give or take some. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the list lately. But, you know, what if he wakes up one day and says, you know, what am I going to do with this money? Why not create my own infrastructure that I don't need to be economically viable at first, to where you can sell residents for $100,000 instead of $500,000, which, you know, would prevent average people from living there, or just setting up to rent. If you can figure out, you know, maybe the whole thing will just be set up as none ownership, just everyone's in the same boat, pays for the square foot or something. And I don't know, yeah, it's really the mind and physical workings of it are really just going to evolve, and it's going to start out, have to start out small, and like we talked about, where it's going to have to be in calm waters, and as they, you know, become bigger and bigger, they will be able to pretty much be anywhere in the seas.
Well, I believe that the potential is going to be essentially limitless. There's a movement going on right now within the early college-aged youth. I shouldn't call them youth. I should say early college-aged adults, that they are doing things to avoid paying for their education. And one of those is that they're selling, say, like the 10% of the first 10 years of their income on the market. And the barter is that somebody else will pay for their education, and then they're then hedging what they're going to pay for that education against what they believe that that individual will be worth over that next 10 years. So that same type of aspect, or that same type of philosophy can be applied to the Seasteading Institute, where somebody will say, well, I will sponsor you coming on here, but I'm going to make 10% of what you do over the next 15 years. And somebody might say, well, that sounds like a fantastic idea to me. That's totally worth it, and it's beneficial for both parties. So we got to really think about this in an outside-of-the-box scenario where it's things that you wouldn't anticipate seeing in regular everyday society, but it's something that's it's beneficial for people, and it may end up being a hell of a lot more exciting than what we consider just like a generic, we're going to set up a couple of rafts, people are going to show up, we'll have some teepees, and it'll be fun. You know, it's going to be much more advanced than that, and there's going to be plenty of opportunities.
Fun, just...
rafts and teepees, okay. I might be willing to do that for a weekend. Yeah, well, so there's plenty of opportunity out there for people to move out there as long as they've got the talent and people are willing to buy into them.
And I like the fact that it exposes the weaknesses of current land-based governments, where how we're so far in debt. You know, it's a way for people to escape the debt, their future generations to escape the debt, and something exciting to live for and look forward to, and future, just, you know, when people consider families, you know, that's when you really start thinking about where, what, and how, you know, where am I going to live, what am I going to be doing, and how to make things work. And it's, I think the seasteading aspects will really drive, you know, like-minded people to certain areas, and like the clip was saying before, and really, I guess it's, but that would be a problem at the same time. You know, people think short term, so all right, you go live on a seastead, but all of a sudden you have a family. Where's the family going to live? Or a generation down the road, you have kids, they have kids, or you're going to have to start buying people out of the place, or else future seasteads, you know, maybe they've just moved to other ones. But it's there's issues, but I think the best aspect of it is the political aspect, and I think it's a great conversation. Why we are talking about it tonight.
Yeah, and it seems, I was thinking about what they're saying in the clip and what Matt was talking about, that you at least in, you know, quite a few potential seasteads, you'd get the most ambitious and strong-willed individuals in whatever effort you're trying to follow through on, and you could potentially use various seastead projects as incubators for, you know, much larger initiatives. Say, look, here's an example of how philosophy X, Y, or Z works, and this is how it potentially could be implemented in a, you know, much broader type of way. So that's also a potential of seastead.
Well, it'd be cool is to build one that can continually be built and improved upon, where it continually expands out on the ocean, so to where someday it gets so big that it's immovable. where it becomes a continent in itself.
Well, there is design already proposed, and I wish I would have done a little bit more prep work for this, but there are absolutely designs. They're hexagonal shaped, and they are designed to be fit into one another. So you can grow them out essentially, quote unquote, organically, so that you can have one seastead butt up to another based on a mutually beneficial relationship. And should that no longer be the case, they can split apart again. And the idea is that you can have them come together for trade and those types of things. But if something came along the lines like one turned into a communist and everybody else was like, hey, F you guys, they could split away and still continue to live their lives among people who share the same idea. So I think there's certainly that is kind of an idea of the direction that people want to take it. They want to make it as like this giant amorphous blob of places where you can live and people can work together where they believe that their work will be best to what they want the end result to be. So if they want to be a communist state, they can go live with a bunch of communists and fail, or they can go, you know, live with some libertarians and then they'll be very successful.
The thing I'm kind of wary about is, you know, seasteading is great. Sounds like a great idea, but I'm just kind of curious how they play. Like, even if you have buildings above sea, how do they control what's going on the seafloor? So, you know, there's always going to be like plate tectonics moving around in the seafloors, and that will cause huge waves and cause tsunamis and things like that. And, you know, I guess I'm just kind of curious how they would kind of fight against these things. And I don't know if you've done any research on that.
The idea is that you're going to have people who are on each one of these seasteaded islands, we'll just call them, or engineers who are thinking about how to overcome these obstacles. And you pay those people to do that job, and then you work on what you're an expert at on your behalf. And it's similar to how society works today, but you would have the most talented people in that position as possible. And yeah, it'd be much more libertarian than what you see today, where you'd have like a government entity saying that we need to make this happen. Instead, you'd have the guy who is responsible for protecting your livelihood and your home.
Well, even if you have the most, you know, I mean, even if you have the most brilliant people working on it, I mean, earthquakes, we still can't even predict when earthquakes are coming. So how do we predict plate tectonics moving under the seafloor and starts causing huge ocean waves and starts destroying the seasteading?
I guess you have that same risk without the seasteading colonies.
And especially if you're trying to expand all this seasteading, seasteading to, you know, throughout, let's say you try to expand it throughout the Pacific Ocean from California to Japan. I mean, I don't know. That just seems a heck lot of risk for me. So,
yeah, but you have that same risk being on land as well without dealing with government.
Well, with like the risk, we're just strictly talking about geology. Like Minnesota, like, you know, there's never going to be earthquakes. So there's
tornadoes.
Like, yeah. No,
okay,
risk.
Hang on, though. Thunder. Hang on. Tonight, we are not joined by Chelsea Cummo because of what? Landslides near her apartment. We never anticipated that being a risk, but it is one today.
We're getting flooded out of Minnesota here. Everyone's basements are wet everywhere.
Flood.
So those risks exist everywhere.
Yeah,
but like these risks, like floods and all that, you know, it's going to cause like, you know, dampening molds and things like that, but it's not going to like destroy the whole infrastructures and buildings and things like that, you know. Well,
you start over.
I mean, earthquakes.
Escape
you know,
in your escape pod and you start over.
One of the things we're saying is that in that regard, just from an engineering perspective, from my knowledge of tsunamis and the weird crap that my memory holds in it, when you're 24 miles out to sea, tsunamis are nothing more than about a 6-inch rise in water, and then you come back down. So you're actually safer than people who live on coastlines.
Yeah, exactly.
You're insulated from that.
Waves that can get up to 100 feet high, but they're usually predictable and noticeable from storms. And it's still, a wave isn't usually exactly a wall, and when it's big enough, it can, I mean, a lot of these seasteads will end up being a lot higher than 100 feet off the ground. I mean, I want to say an aircraft carrier is close to, I think they're at least 100 feet off the ground today.
I think they're more than that, but that, you know, the idea is that the technology is available. Right. Well, it depends on what it is. Some of them are essentially just barges sitting on the water, and I mean, it's up to you which one you want to
invest in. Yeah, that will be feasible in calm water. So.
That sounds so expensive.
There will always be.
That'll
be
cool.
Ways.
That'll be sweet. You know, it'll be sweet. You know, especially if you're, you know, as a vacation home or some sort, and just kind of go all the way to the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and then says, "Hey, you know what? I have a place here." So it's like, cool. You know, awesome. But I don't know. I don't think I can afford it ever.
See, but I don't think. Really wealthy people probably wouldn't want to live in one of these. Why you'd want to just make your own yacht and live wherever, you know, live in multiple areas. And when you own a
no, because there's a lot of wealthy people out there that yachts. Want to make more money. They have the same, you know, they a lot of wealthy people want to make more money than what they already have, even though they're really wealthy. So this would present an opportunity to, you know, more insulate themselves from other governments' currencies. You know, it's kind of like a Bitcoin kind of scenario where now your money's not tied up into one nation's responsibility. It's also tied into these seasteads that have their own individual currency.
Trust me, governments will evolve to tax people if they're making money from their country, if they're living in a seastead. They're going to create regulations around it. But I don't know. Sure, people, yeah, would move to Hong Kong to utilize their free markets and grow wealthy from there. But it's, I just don't see seasteads as the crux of the matter or the real pull to for it to go out there and make money. It's more to live free. Right. Is what around a system of like minds, because I mean this is coming out of Silicon Valley. I mean most of the people that you know will work out of this San Francisco one that's going to be built 24 miles out of sea is going to be all tech people, to where they're all the majority of the work is just going to be in a sense a massive Google warehouse. Yeah. So it's all going to have all the food provided and condo living and creating their own society, and the economy built around it will be limited to a sense. It'll be more based on other corporations spread around the world that, or their own that they create, you know, at the seastead, I guess, but still utilizing mainlands more than just utilizing the exact economy of the seastead.
So speaking of Silicon Valley and looking to be free. I think we, before the show, we talked a little bit about Glenn Greenwald, or Lydia did a little bit.
Oh yeah, this sounds awesome.
And what's going on there? So, Lydia, what were your thoughts on the latest Glenn Greenwald revelations?
I'm just excited to learn more about these upcoming revelations. I saw a clip this afternoon. I believe it was on Fox News interviewing Glenn Greenwald, and they were really kind of trying to pull information, more specific information out of him as to what these revelations might include or when they might be revealed. But it sounds like in the near future, I take that to mean in the next week or two, we will be learning more about specifically people, and individuals that were targeted via a published list, that were targeted by the NSA. And so I'm just looking forward to seeing that list and learn and getting an idea of what kind of people. Glenn Greenwald did mention, you know, most of these people are politically active. I think we could all kind of assume that, but what kind of politically active people and who specifically the National Security Agency is interested in.
Definitely Liberty Southwest.
I was going to say, it'll be interesting to know if the NSA listens to the Liberty Southwest podcasts. Yeah.
I'd be flattered.
No, well, I think these lists will not be current lists. These will still be lists from when Edward Snowden acquired the information years ago.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
This is true. I don't think Liberty Southwest will be updated enough to make the list. Right.
Dang it.
Yeah, we'll make the cut, Matt.
Think of the publicity. So
what do you think the fallout from that could possibly be?
I mean, I don't know. It depends who's on that list. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be politicians, if it's going to be, you know, I don't know if it'll be celebrities that are politically or, you know, involved in causes, if it's going to be, you know, government officials, if it's going to be, I mean, I have no idea. So I think it'll be interesting to see what areas of political activity they're interested in. And obviously those individuals, well, that was the other thing they said on this interview on Fox was they were talking about Glenn Greenwald. Before he published this list, he contacted the individuals to confirm that they would want their names published. So I think there's some people who, for various reasons, don't want to be
exposed.
To be outed, yeah, exposed as being targets of the NSA, but I'm just eager to see.
That was going to lead to one of my points. How do we know this isn't propaganda? I mean, the NSA is spying on pretty much most of the public in a sense, and
that's difficult to know either way.
How do you know? How did Snowden know if he's the one that acquired this information that these are the high valued targets of the NSA, or maybe that is specifically the list, the A list?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics behind
that Edward
it.
Snowden
I don't
know grabbed, the specifics but it's this could be to drive certain agendas. At the same time, it's I'm still always leery of this kind of information, but it will be exciting to hear it in the fallout. But
I'm kind of interested in the clip. And you said Lydia, it's probably about 3 or 4 minutes. Is that what it is? 5 or 6, maybe?
Yeah, I would say the beginning half is sort of more about the upcoming publications. The second half is more regarding current activity in Iraq. So, yeah.
So, let's roll the clip a little bit. We can stop it if we should, but up through about 6 minutes or so. I'm kind of curious. So, here you go.
Be outraged. Journalist Glenn Greenwald says he's about to drop the biggest bombshell yet from NSA documents. Greenwald, of course, the journalist who helped the former National Security Agency contractor Ed Snowden leak those documents. Today marks 1 year since Ed Snowden hopped a plane to Moscow as he was facing federal espionage charges here in the United States. It all started in May of last year when the government contractor told the NSA he needed some time off for medical treatment. He soon left his home in Hawaii and headed to Hong Kong. There, Ed Snowden met with two journalists, one of them, Glenn Greenwald. Snowden gave them classified data that he had taken from the NSA. Weeks later, some of it went public in the British newspaper, The Guardian. Some of the biggest revelations from the leak, the government's bulk collection program, showing the feds had gathered the phone records of millions upon millions of Americans. It also shed light on the PRISM program, that collection of private information from Internet users, as well as a report accusing the NSA of spying on European government offices. The Justice Department charged Ed Snowden with violating the Espionage Act. The feds revoked his passport. Right now, he's living in Russia, pretty much out in the open, we're told, giving speeches and lectures. Glenn Greenwald recently wrote a book about the whole situation called No Place to Hide, the USA and the U.S. Surveillance State. And he's with us on the Fox News Deck this afternoon. It's good to see you. Thank you.
Great to be here.
How's he doing?
He's actually doing really well. Our assumption was, his assumption was that he would end up in a U.S. prison for the rest of his life, which is what made he did, what he did so courageous. And yet he's free. As you said, he participates in the debate that he helped around the world to trigger, and he's extremely satisfied that he feels he did the right thing. And when you have a clean conscience, that provides a lot of happiness.
Why not come home and face this?
He would come home if he thought he could get a fair trial. The problem is that he's charged with this Espionage Act, which was written in 1917 by Woodrow Wilson, designed to criminalize dissent against World War I. And under that law, he is barred. He would be barred by a judge from coming and making the defense he'd want to make, which is, I did this because it was improper to conceal it and the public had a right to know. You're not even allowed to raise that as a defense, and his conviction and probably life imprisonment would be all but guaranteed.
You're about to release more from this list of documents, and from what I've read, we're going to learn the kinds of people, at least, that the NSA was targeting?
And some specific people as well. I mean, this is...
Individuals?
Yeah, individuals.
Like who?
Well, I can't break the story on your show as much as I would love to, but the story is imminent. But, you know, I think that is...
What does that
the
mean,
question.
Is that today? Is it tomorrow?
Within, I mean, my colleagues at the office will kill me if I give you a specific time frame, because that puts great
really,
pressure on
really
them. But
soon.
It's really, really soon. And, you know, I think that is the key to think about, is that we shouldn't think about powers we give to the government only when we like the people with that power or like how they're exercising it. The founders instructed us to think, do we want government to have power when people we don't trust are exercising it in ways we don't like? And we shouldn't want the government with the power to spy on us in the dark and with very little accountability.
How much concern that if you release this, others are compromised?
We have been extraordinarily careful about the documents
we've
published.
Well, lots of people disagree with you.
Well,
that,
I mean, the proof, though, is in the pudding. Edward Snowden gave us many tens of thousands of documents over a year ago, and in that time we published a very small percentage of those documents because, at his insistence, we only published that which the public needed to know to have a debate about surveillance without compromising any lives or putting people in danger. And I think, you know, if you look at how careful we've been, that shows you what kind of source this was.
You were on Bill Maher over the weekend, and we were
what
talking
we
about
needed
these,
to know.
This ISIS group with others who are with them, obviously, and running to
is
create
that pretty
a
much
caliphate
it, Lydia?
Across the north of Iraq and Syria. And you said something to the
yeah, that's about
of,
it. Yeah,
who's
okay.
worse, really, them
so
or in
Iraq.
Essence the Americans who invaded or would invade? You equated our forces.
Okay, that'll be interesting. It sounds
yeah.
So
I'm just interested to see kind of. More specifics of what was targeted. I just think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have a good idea what.
Right. I have a general idea in my own assumptions, but I mean having.
It's going to probably follow a lot what the IRS was doing to certain 501c.
Yes, that, and I think also it wouldn't surprise me either if there are, you know, kind of the more radical anti-war organizations as well. That wouldn't surprise me either.
That would be, I could hope, that's what I would hope for. It would show the fallacy of them blindly following the Democrats usually, but... Most of the anti-war crowd, you know, it was all highlighted during the Bush years, so maybe I'm being a little judgmental, but they kind of fell off the planet when Barack was, since Barack's been in power, but.
Yeah, but I think as time goes on, more and more of that faction of the Democratic liberal kind of left of center people, I think, are breaking away from Obama, or kind of, I don't know, realizing that this isn't just a Republican thing; it's a two party thing.
Well, I think on college campuses, libertarians are growing big time, and
well, I think even just
more
I think
and more
even just
swell, but.
I think even just nationally, I think a lot of the sort of liberty, I think more and more people are through various issues and various, various issues that affect their own lives are coming to libertarianism. I know someone from Yale the other day posted a link about the like Uber and the Lyft and these sort of sharing economy transportation services. and what city governments are doing to limit them and limit their opportunities and limit their businesses. And I think more and more issues that we see in our news today are bringing these ideas of liberty to new and different people. So that's exciting, I think.
That's awesome. I agree. I think we have an entire another topic just based on that alone.
Well, I'm going to throw out a prediction about this revelation. My prediction is it's not going to be too very left or right sided. It's going to be more liberty-minded people. And
oh, you think so?
Why or what?
No, I just said you. Do you think so?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be as heavily Republican, and you know, as Republicans want to think. I think it's going to be a lot more of let's say Ron Paul type Republicans, and then a lot more of the libertarian,
liberty-minded
groups out
there.
This
is the thing. Go ahead.
No, I just by the own government, our own government's admission to where domestic terrorists is what they've been calling a lot of liberty-minded people, and I think those are going to be the ones that were heavily targeted by the NSA, and it's going to really expose what our government fears the most. And I would argue most of these people are live a nonviolent philosophy in life, and yet we are the ones that generally get, you know, the surveillance on. But I could be wrong, but that's just my prediction.
Well, this is the other thing, though, to think is that if these are truly leaked and secret documents, I mean, the NSA wasn't expecting people to know who was on this list. So there might be people that we wouldn't even expect to be on there just because the NSA never expected to be caught. Listen, do you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
that there's also that component, which I think is sort of intriguing.
Well, that would be pretty intriguing. I think there's going to be a lot of people looking to see if their names are on there.
All right. Well, this has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 19. Danny Ning, Eric Taylor, Lydia Tabbitt, Kirk Pettis, and myself, Matt Winter. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to next time.